Hey, I'm on. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's Dr. Lisa, and I'm here with my first installment of Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. It's pretty incredible. I want to thank you for listening. It's part of Brooklyn Free Radio. And I'm just really excited to be here, and thanks for listening, whoever you are out there. And the other, so let's, you know, there's a little bit of a learning curve here. And my guest today is Tom Tenney, who is actually the instigator behind the entire, him and Rob Pritchard have both put this brand new radio station together, which is a huge, crazy, insane, monstrous undertaking. So I thought a great way to get started, since I'm planning on doing a lot of psychotherapy on this show. As you may know, or if you may not know, I am Dr. Lisa, the self-proclaimed psychotherapist. I've been doing psychotherapy on stage, on the street, on I have done some podcasts, and I've been doing it since 2001. So I have actually quite a bit of experience at this point. But anyway, we have Tom here today because I thought he would be a great guest and a great way for us to find out a little bit about the thinking behind this station, how this station got started, and a way that I can actually kind of intuitively get into my role here as a psychotherapist, self-proclaimed psychotherapist on this station. So, so Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Lisa. Is my mic on? It should be all the way up.
All the way up.
Oh, there I am.
There. Tom's probably going to walk me through this. Well. Anyway.
I'm patient / technician today.
Tom is, Tom, first of all, I want to find out how Tom got into this and like what kind of mentality has in order to do this. But today, before we get started, I just need to start off with a little bit of countertransference so that we can sort of start on a, you know, clean note. Now, your real psychotherapist doesn't do countertransference, although I believe she should, which is my feeling about the patient, the feelings that I've transferred on to Tom, okay? The feelings Tom transfers on to me are just regular old transference. But this is countertransference. All therapists have it, but therapists also don't spend any time outside of the shrink room, the shrink office with their patients. So this is how I deal with it, and it's very effective for me, and I think I think we all learned something here. So Tom, first of all, one of the things, if you haven't noticed, is I'm incredibly afraid of authority. So we're starting with that, and you are authority figure to me.
Okay.
Okay, so that's from my childhood, from my frightening parents. But I wanted to point out that I thought we had, and we don't, I know Tom through our mutual friend, Reverend Jen, who I bet a lot of you listeners may have heard of. And Reverend Jen is an extraordinary person. I think Tom has known her a lot longer than I have, but that is how we've met. And Tom, was she ever, you started out doing, running a performance venue, is that right?
Well, I didn't start out running a performance venue. I started out producing stuff at Surf Reality, actually.
Oh, okay.
And, first I had a show at Tonic, then I moved it to Surf Reality. Then in 2002, I did open a performance space called Space on Avenue B and 14th Street in the East Village. Yeah.
So was Reverend Jen one of your guests on the, or, you know, a performer on those shows?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, and the show that I did for 4 years at Surf was called Grindhouse a Go-Go, and Reverend Jen was a regular in the cast in all of those shows. We used to do a different show, a new show every month. It was like a midnight show. It was really super fun.
That must have been awesome.
It was great.
I had such a, like, 9-to-9 job in those days.
Yeah, so did I, and believe me, it's like I got very little sleep back in those days.
Yeah, well, you've got energy. You've got energy,
I guess.
And you weren't dealing with, like, trying to get a relationship together. Or maybe you were. I don't know. We'll find out.
I was trying to get everything together, relationships included.
Okay, so we established that we know each other through Reverend Jen, although we don't know each other really well, very, very much at all, mostly through parties and saying hello. And I've been a supporter of your festival, though I haven't been very involved in it, but I'm very aware of it. It's gotten a lot of attention. And Reverend Jen now has a black cat that is difficult to deal with that's named after you. Is that right?
Right. I'm not sure. I mean, I hope that she didn't name it after me because it was difficult to deal with, but it's entirely possible.
Well, I'm sure it's because it was... Reverend Jen loves the cat, and, you know,
yeah.
I mean, that's its character, but she likes that about all animals.
Right. And she actually named it after me because she missed my birthday party while she was rescuing it. So.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. So just the counter transference story that I wanted to relate was during our training session, I actually tripped over something. I tripped over a microphone wire or a headphone wire, and I broke this piece of equipment, this huge, huge piece of equipment here, which turned out to be not nearly, I thought it was going to be like thousands, but it was $99, which is in my budget. So we were able to resolve that whole thing. I thought that was like a really good exchange in a way, because we went through something tense together and resolved it fairly simply with some trust. And it stuck in my head that when it was done, that you had said something like, well, we got that out of the way.
Yeah.
And that really, like, Tom, that really, like, stuck with me, because it made me feel like, oh, this is what happens normally, and it's okay, we went through it, and now we're past that, we don't have to go through that again.
Right. And that's sort of, you know, that's kind of how I feel about a lot of things with this operation, is that, you know, don't, like, things are going to break. Things are going to fail. Your show, you're going to tune into your show one day and it's not going to be there. And I'm not saying, you know, we suck at what we do. I'm saying that things happen, and not to stress out too much about them.
Okay.
You know, and so that statement was just kind of like, okay, well, we were probably gonna break a piece of equipment in the first week, so we did it. And so we can check that off the list and move on.
Okay. Well, I know anyway, that struck a chord with me. I was like, oh, he's like this is not a big deal to, like, he's you're ready. So I wanted to, like, find out about you and your background, how you would be, what in your nature would make you want to take on, I mean, explain the complexity of the project if you can, because it involves, like, how many new, it's all new technology or new technology put together and all new radios. Explain what you're taking on, please.
Right. So, you know, whereas most people, if they launch an internet radio station, they want, you know, they want to launch something where they can play their music a couple times a week and have their friends tune in or whatever. It's just not in my nature to do anything small like that. It's like, if I do something, I have to do it huge, and I have to do it like earth-shakingly important. And, you know, and it's kind of a problem, actually, because I really wish I could do small things and not care so much about them. But, you know, also, it may be relevant that I am a diagnosed bipolar.
Ah.
So I have what's called hyper focus.
Ah.
So when I get, and the way that my mind works is that I love big systems, and they're big giant Rube Goldberg machines and logic problems, and, you know, and it's, I absolutely love that. And even though it makes me insane and I end up like missing important things that I'm responsible for while I'm putting it together, and really it's kind of unhealthy, but at the same time it's really, really gratifying when it's done, when it's up and running. So like now we have a 24/7, you know, internet radio network that we launched with 40 shows, 16 coming in June, and this is, we just started building this in March, so I'm pretty happy with it so far.
Wow, it's like, it's mind-boggling to me, but it sounds like this isn't the first time you've put something of this magnitude together.
Well, right. I mean, and that's, so like all of my, you know, Remix Media Festival, I didn't want to do just one show one year. I wanted to do a whole festival that ran over several days in several venues and that was an annual event. And, you know, even Grindhouse A-Go-Go, the show that ran for 4 years at Surf Reality, I wanted to do something that was big, that wasn't just a kind of a one-off show.
Where is the satisfaction? I mean, there could be so many places to have it, but is there a way that you can sort of define it, or a way that you personally think of it? This, like, what you're getting out of it? Because it's obviously, I mean, look at me, I got this whole radio show. This is incredible. But you're passionate about it. I want to hear about what form that is in.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, because it does have that sort of, you know, the personal gratification thing. But then there's also, you know, one of our reasons for starting this, you know, both Rob and I are very passionate about being able to give artists a platform to kind of experiment and do what they want. And, you know, not everything has to be polished kind of MTV hyper corporate version of things, as mm-hmm. you know, and that seems to be kind of what's, as the indie scene gets phased out in New York because of real estate, right? There's no place to actually do anything anymore.
Right.
We started to think about, well, where could we actually do this, where it would be feasible? And then the idea of this, you know, of this radio station came around. And we both thought it was a fantastic idea. Now, not everybody who contributes to this isn't necessarily going to be everybody's medium. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. some people are going to try it and they're going to go, the just audio thing isn't for me, and that's fine. You know, right. But the idea is that we want all of those artists who used to have such a strong voice in New York City, you know, in Manhattan, when the whole, you know, LES scene was thriving in the late 90s, early 2000s. We want them to continue to have a voice. And to not just, you know, have to stay at home and make YouTube videos.
Well, this is a great, and this is actually very timely, because podcasts and all this radio stuff is coming right back. So it's kind of almost a modern, more modern, it's future, it's like a natural progression.
Right.
In a way.
Yeah. I mean, and that definitely factored into our decision to do this, too. I mean, with the success of Serial, suddenly audio was the all the rage mm-hmm. again. So the timing was really good.
So if you know, and also, you know, I'm here to protect and honor all of your boundaries. But so please don't hesitate to make me aware of them.
I have no boundaries.
Oh, great. Perfect.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk a little bit about your bipolarness. I didn't
Sure.
know that you were bipolar. How did you find out? How does this affect you? What is that like?
Well, this mic is really being wacky. Sorry, you guys, if it fits. It sounds like it's distorting a little bit.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. All right, good. So, well, my dad was bipolar and wasn't diagnosed till he was in his, I guess, 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And, he, you know, I always sort of knew I had kind of the same tendencies that he had, but I never really kind of, you know, I always sort of thought that, oh, these are things that I can handle myself and I don't need, mm-hmm. you know, a therapist, or I didn't, you know. And then in 2008, I just had this complete and total meltdown. I'm not going to go into like all the details about it, but I ended up in a psych ward for a week.
Wow.
And, I started going to a psychiatrist. I had to start going to a psychiatrist. And, mm-hmm. you know, he, after several sessions, gave me a diagnosis of, I'm not severely bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a continuum, it's a spectrum, you know, but mm-hmm. I'm definitely on that spectrum, and, you know, and it's good because it helps me understand my own behavior and why I do things, and it gives me sort of almost like a third party perspective on it, you know.
That's a healthy attitude. Like, you mean like putting a name and label to it?
Yeah.
Is like, okay, this is the way I am and I can just work with this.
Right, exactly.
And I think being bipolar may have some advantages. I mean, some people,
you get shit done.
Some people, I mean, I've read a bit.
Yeah.
Describe, like you said, what was your father like? What was he like? What was your relationship with him like? Him being bipolar and all.
Yeah, I mean, it was really difficult. I mean, I should say that my parents split up when I was 2.5 years old. So I did not grow up with my dad in the house, but I did sort of grow up with him around.
Mm-hmm.
He lived in the same city since from the time I was 5, kind of on. And we saw him fairly frequently, mm-hmm. and it was difficult. I mean, he was difficult to be around. There was one time he was driving us home, and in a fit of road rage, deliberately got us into an accident. Like, deliberately drove his car into the car ahead of us.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
See, therapists aren't allowed to say that, but they're fucking thinking it. Come
yeah.
on, how could you not?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So, would you call him a rageaholic too?
Yeah, I guess. But I think that, I mean, rageaholic is so, rage comes from all different kinds of places.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
that's true.
So
describe him just a little bit more. I mean, what did he do for a living?
He was a lawyer.
What kind of law?
And, well, mainly contract law by the end of his life. But he had been, you know, when I was really super young, he had been a part of many law firms and found himself fired, I think, from most of them. And as a result, we moved around the country a bit when I was a very small child. He also taught. I mean, he and I have so many similar qualities. Like, we both love teaching and, you know, he was the dean of the Law School of Commonwealth Law in Massachusetts for a while. And the last 20 years of his life, he worked for the state and didn't really do very much. It was really kind of awful because you could tell, you know, go and see him at his office and he was always just doing crossword puzzles. You know, he wasn't doing anything that seemed really fulfilling to him. So,
right.
You know, that was sort of sad. But my relationship with him as a kid was always problematic. You know, for a while I thought, well, maybe he's an alcoholic. He drank a lot of wine. Like, maybe he's an alcoholic. I don't really know. But, you know, it sort of all made sense when he, you know, finally went to a doctor and
got
diagnosed.
Well, are you saying that his behavior was erratic? I mean,
yeah.
Was he abusive?
No. Well, no.
I mean, driving the car into a...
Yeah. I mean, that certainly could be construed as being abusive.
But was it more like he got really angry and then that was it? Like, he got his anger? I'm picturing him as somebody who would, like, blow up.
Yeah, he would. Yeah, he would blow up.
And then after he blew up, it was over and that was it?
Yeah, I guess. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to say because each one of these incidents seems like such an isolated thing because it wasn't like, again, like, he wasn't around.
Right.
So I didn't see the whole progression of the whole thing. I would just see these parts of it.
Right, because you saw him for...
For like a day at a time or something.
Did you ever stay over?
Yeah, sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I did.
So brothers or sisters? Do you have brothers or sisters?
I have two older sisters and I have a stepsister and a stepbrother.
Oh, that's interesting because I was sure you were going to be like the oldest.
No, I'm the youngest. Well, of my natural siblings, I'm the youngest.
Yeah, I would have thought you were like, did you have a role like that when you were growing up, like, you know, running things? Was that part of, you know, something that you
No, and in fact, and in fact, I mean, I think that maybe part of the reason that I'm so obsessed with running things now is that I didn't as a, you know, I felt really, as the youngest, I felt kind of powerless, actually.
Ah, so, like, were you not allowed to do things? What was the powerlessness like?
Well, I mean, I was the only boy in, you know, with two sisters and a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt like there was just some kind of a club that I was never part of.
Oh.
And I still sort of feel like that a little bit, you know. They all live in California. I live out here. They kind of really don't know what I do. And
they're all, are they all really close?
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
girls.
Yeah. Oh, totally. You know, and like girls. Right, they live in the same area. Like my sister's kids, my nieces and nephews are all like best friends with each other, and you know.
Oh, so you're like a really family-oriented guy without a family.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Oh, that makes so much sense now.
Yeah.
But you think they have a good thing. You're like, that looks like fun. If I could only try on all the clothes with them and, you know, Google over the babies. And is that what you mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I want to try on clothes with them.
Well,
but...
no, but I mean, if it was fun for you or whatever.
Right. I mean, and you know, and I really do love going out there and spending time with them. Uh-huh. And I mean, I love my family desperately, more than anything.
Get that. Yeah.
You know, and you know, just I do get really sad at times that I'm so far away and that I'm, you know, I don't have a family here. But that said, I do have something of a kind of a almost a family network here. You know,
you definitely do. I mean, I'm sort of like, you know, I mean, I'm late, literally late to the party on that, but I feel part of that too, and it is a very welcoming family.
Right.
You know, especially like with Reb Jen. I mean, she's so welcoming.
She's very welcoming.
And you know, you guys all are to each other. But what was I going to say? So are they kind of normal? Because you're not.
Yeah. They're you know, compared to me, they're definitely much more normal.
They're conventional. Let's do a station ID before I forget. Let's talk about, so this is Radio Free Brooklyn. Is there anything else I'm supposed to say now, Tom?
No, you're just...
I'm just getting it in there. And we have a sponsor today. I'm wearing a Jim Kempner Madness of Art shirt. So I want to make sure that everybody knows about the Jim Kempner Gallery, which is a great gallery. And the Madness of Art is the best web series that's ascended of the art world. And if you haven't checked it out, you should, because it's really, really funny. The guy that runs it, Jim Kempner, is also like a comedian. So there, he's one of our sponsors today. And we're also sponsored Jesus.
This is exactly how sponsors love to be presented.
I know.
Our sponsor, who are they?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the first Paul Mitchell. Paul Mitchell. See, I got nervous because we had such a big sponsor.
Paul Mitchell, the hair product people?
Yeah, Paul Mitchell, because they're one of our sponsors. They're really good. If you need to wash your hair, you should get Paul Mitchell conditioner and hair shampoo. Okay? That's sponsors. There, I put a plug in for them. So now we can continue on about your normal family.
Okay.
So they all live out there, and you live out here, and there's kind of a cultural divide. So I want to know. So I'm really bad at. I have to always ask this too, because I suck at telling whether people are gay or straight. Are you hetero?
I'm bisexual.
You're bisexual. See, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. But you know what? I mean, I sort of think. I mean, I don't know if we really want to get into that, but I mean, I think that, again, like, I think that I think of sexuality as a spectrum, as a continuum. I don't think of it as either or. So.
Okay, because the question I was going to ask, you were, let's see how this relates. I mean, I was curious I was wondering about, since, like, say you were heterosexual, how your relationship with your family would have influenced your relationship about women and wanting to be in charge and them being in charge and all that. But let's just say, like, I got a sense that having, you know, so let's...
I don't think that is that specific
to
gay or straight or anything. I mean, I think that's something that's just a part of relationships. And I think that we definitely, family dynamics get played out always to some degree in relationships. And also I've never, like, you know, I mean, I say I'm bisexual, but all of my relationships have been with women.
Hmm. So, and I agree with what you're saying, but I mean, it's just the matter of if you really identify definitely as straight and you were more likely to project female family members onto your partner, and you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying.
So it's just a way of looking at the world
it
is,
sure.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
So, so let's talk about your relationships. I mean, because I'm curious, but it's also a good way to, like, see how somebody's life plays out for them.
Yeah.
So are you in a relationship now?
I am not in a relationship at the moment.
So have you had a lot of long-term relationships?
It depends on what you mean by a lot. I've had, yeah, I mean, I've had several. Usually my, long-term relationships tend to last about, two to 4 years. And, and they don't always end, terribly. Sometimes they just, you kind of just reach the end. You're like, okay, we kind of did all that we were going to do with this, and so let's move on.
So what about being, so you've obviously never been married.
I have never been married.
I'm wondering if all your drive and activities get in the way of you having long, I mean, yeah, you've had
They
long.
do. They that definitely gets in the way. I mean, I will totally cop to that. I mean, my the last long-term relationship that I had ended, and it ended on a really bad note, and I will say not because of anything that I did, but I will say, but also the tension that kind of led up to it did have to do with the fact that I was still in grad school. I was very, very focused on being like the best student ever. Like I had to, like I was not going to graduate without a 4.0. I wasn't going, that wasn't going to happen. And so I became really, really super hyper focused on my work. And I even after my girlfriend and I moved in together, I got a separate studio space that I could go and work in just because I needed to be able, I needed to be able to focus, and it was really hard to do when somebody else was around me, or like even like eating Doritos like 2 rooms over,
Yeah, the Doritos are the biggest. Yeah, those are relationship
they're
killers. I've heard a, look, you're not the first person who's complained about that in a relationship. I know someone who's married who complains about that a lot, actually.
about Doritos?
Yeah, about the chomping of Doritos
Yeah.
is a yeah, it can wear
There's
on you.
right, no, there's something about the chomping.
Yeah, not that we don't love Doritos, for God's sakes, if you're going to chomp.
Oh no, for sure.
Because I'm pitching them to be our next sponsor along with Paul
Are you
Mitchell.
really?
Yeah.
Really weird. Like Doritos has come up several times for me this week in various contexts. It's
Really?
it's bizarre. I don't know,
Yeah,
it's the universe
something
trying to
about, I think it's our audience is Doritos. One of my close friends is a huge Dorito fan.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. So we're drilling down really, Tom, to tell you the truth. We're drilling down to see what your level of intimacy is. Okay. So you are really driven. You are really driven. And why did you need to get such good grades? What was that about? Were you
I don't know, but this is, I'm sure it has, partly to do with the bipolar thing and being, in the whole sort of hyper focus aspect of that. But even when I was a kid, it was like I remember the first time that I ever skipped school, right, was I had there was this contest to write reports on various states of the United States, and it was a road race. We had cars that went across a map, and like every state that we wrote a report on, we could move the car through that map. And so I was determined to be first, and somebody beat me, and I raised my hand and I said, "Well, I wrote a report on all 50 states." And then it immediately cast the other person into just my shadow, and everyone was like, "Whoa, that's amazing!" And I was like, "Yeah, I don't have it with me, but I'll bring it in tomorrow." And of course, I had only written like maybe 12 reports,
Wow.
so I went home and I stayed up all night and I skipped school the next day, and I was only in like 5th grade.
Wow.
And I was so scared. I remember I pulled the curtains in the house, and I when I had to go from room to room, I would crawl on my hands and knees so my neighbors wouldn't see me in the window.
That's really insane.
But yeah, and so, but I wrote all 50 reports and I brought them in the next day.
And did you get like an A on that and
Yeah,
stuff like
yeah.
that?
I want. I mean, I the other person won a prize too, but they gave me another, like we like split the prize, right? So.
Holy cow. He must have that person's probably talking that to a therapist right now, someplace else. So what about like was your mom like super impressed? Did you get support or were they totally were they freaked out or impressed
No,
or how did they handle
I
like
don't
a
think they were super impressed. I mean, you know what the prize was? It was a freaking it was a gift certificate for an ice cream cone at Brigham's.
That's pretty good.
That was the prize.
Not bad, not bad.
But it wasn't about what the prize was. I know. It was about winning.
It was about winning. So was that, was what is that? Is that a self-esteem thing, an ego thing, a challenge thing? What do you think that is?
Well, I don't know. You're the therapist.
Well, you know, I'm trying to find out. I mean, I'm trying to find out. I mean, do you know, it's all coming from you, Tom.
I get it. I don't know.
Well, we'll have to think about that. I'm going to think about that. When I get to know you better, I'll tell you what I think.
I think it has something to do with the feeling of powerlessness, you know, and the wanting to have, you know, get attention or be powerful in some area.
Right. You know? So, like, when you were growing up, because you had two older sisters, were a lot of decisions made, like, around your sisters? Like, if everybody said, let's paint the house, the front door of the house and the outside of the house pink, and you were like, fuck no, but, like, did that happen anyway?
I mean, I will say yes, based on my experience and my memory. I would imagine that my mom and or my sisters would probably have a different answer, you know? So I think it really is all about perception. And, you know, I mean, and memory is such a slippery thing. It's we remember things the way that we want to remember them. And, you know, it's not like our minds are little video recorders. Memory is just completely subjective.
Yeah,
so.
No, and I agree with you completely on that. But what I'm interested as your therapist here is your feelings,
right?
So I mean, if it nothing against your family, for God's sake, they obviously did a pretty damn good job.
Yeah.
But and you love them and all that, that's clear.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering if you may have some anger, you may have some residual anger.
You think?
but I want to hear, like, tell me one of the things. Is there something you remember that they did? Because I could see it. You know, how much older are they than you?
Not that. I mean, my oldest sister is 5 years older and my other sister is 3 years older.
Okay, so we have like a 4-year-old boy and a 7-8-year-old and a 10-11-year-old and your mom. They all want pink. So there's this little kid going, ooh, and then they give you like a, you know, they'll like give you something to manipulate you to keep you quiet for a few minutes, and that's done. It's the decision's made, time marches on.
Yeah.
So do you have any memories like that? Is there anything like sticks out for you where you got kind of overruled or... it was a girly thing or any of that?
Yeah, I mean, my feel, again, it's like, and I don't trust my memory at all, but my feeling is that I felt like that all the time, right?
Really?
That I was constantly sort of, getting overruled. I mean, I really felt like I was just this sort of like, you know, I didn't have any allies and they were all allied, you know?
Wow.
And that's just, you know, partly it's being the youngest, partly it's being the only boy.
Right, right. But it was circumstances, clearly. And, you know, no, I get it. I get how that all happened. But, yeah, so that is definitely a big factor in your growing up. But you actually, what's really cool is that you made it into a really positive thing.
I mean, you could say that.
Although, I don't know. So you seem like you have not had a lot of really, really intimate relationships with a significant other.
That I have not?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to say that because it seems to me because there's a resistance to it. Maybe you don't feel like you need it. Do you feel like you have trust issues? Do you feel like you're gonna be dominated by another person, or what do you think it's about?
No, I mean, I have to just back up a little and say that I don't entirely agree with your characterization.
Okay, please explain it.
I don't think that. You know, like I said, like some of the long-term relationships have been really satisfying and awesome. And, you know, and in fact, mm-hmm. most have.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, you know, there are issues, I think, that come up with any two personalities, you know. Because everybody has different upbringings. Everybody's, you know, sort of vision or their movie of the world that plays in their head is a little bit different from everybody else's, right?
So
it's always, intimacy is always a matter of trying to, If not, have the other person's movie in your head, at least understand, you know, try to get it, try to put subtitles on it
so that
you can, you know.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that it's like I particularly have, you know, intimacy issues. But that said, I mean, there are things that are super important to me and that, frankly, I have been, you know, unwilling to sacrifice.
Right.
For a relationship. Like, honestly, so it was at that moment in time that this was going on with my last ex-girlfriend. Mm-hmm. It was the most important thing to me was to be, you know, this amazing student with a 4.0 average. And,
right.
You know, and that served me professionally, you know, because I did do that. And I, you know, and I was the day that I graduated, I was offered a teaching job. And so I don't think that, you know, I mean, I wanted to be a star. And
right.
So I made myself into a star.
Right. And that was actually, I mean, that stuff is really good, like planning for the future. I'm wondering if the girls, like, I guess maybe I'm projecting as a girl.
Yeah.
I'm projecting on the girls. I'm projecting that the girls are saying, the girls that you've gone out with are saying things like, I really like Tom. I wish he was more available. I wish he made me more of a priority. Is that what
that's possible. That's entirely possible that they could be saying that. But you know, I will also say that the women that I'm most attracted to are women who are passionate about their own things in their life too. You know what I mean? And so like I don't necessarily believe that two people have to shape themselves in the other's image, you know. I believe in two strong, independent people who are doing interesting things, who, you know, who can share those things with each other, but their lives don't have to be like this sort of like intermingled, intertwined mess, right?
Right. That does sound healthy. So, with all the devotion, or not devotion, but I mean, I think it's amazing. I think it's a real gift to have some passion for something. I mean, you know, I certainly feel this way about my work, where that you can focus so hard on it and it can be so just consuming and it's a relationship with something outside of yourself that's really satisfying and can also be good for other people. But if I was going to say maybe if you ever feel like your life isn't balanced, if you ever feel that way, what would you say, what would be like not the balance, what would balance it more?
Oh, there are so many things that could balance it more. There are so many things that I'm bad at in just life-wise, you know what I mean? Like finance, like I'm terrible personal finance. Like I'm the worst. You know, and it's like I know this and I don't do anything about it, and I wonder why I don't do anything about it, and then it gets worse. And so, you know, there's things like that that I just feel like I can't, for some reason, money just freaks me the fuck out.
So you don't like to think about it, or you don't like to keep track of it, or
all of that stuff, all of it. Like I don't like to check my bank account, because I don't, even if I have a lot of money, I don't, it's always going to be probably less than I thought it was going to be, and that's going to freak me out.
Right.
And I never looked at my pay stubs. I never you know.
Do you owe money? Do you want to?
Oh, I owe so much money. Oh my God,
oh.
I am in such debt. I have a student loan of about $70,000.
Wow, those whole student loan things.
I know.
Incredible.
I know. Well, you know, I think who was it? I think it was Liam McEnany or somebody recently on one of these shows said something like, you know, what are you going to do? Come repossess my knowledge of medieval philosophy. You know, and it's kind of a good way to look at it, you know, because it's like, all right, I shouldn't maybe be stressing that much about my student loans. I mean, my credit is already for shit. I mean, I know I can't, you know,
right,
buy a car or, you know, buy a house,
right? But you're not like, that's not something that is in your, that's not like your goal in life.
No, that's fine. And I actually have a car. I mean, I just bought a used car.
Right.
But that doesn't freak me out. But what it does freak me out when I have to look for an apartment in New York.
Oh, yeah, that's always tough.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I know people that have, like, good job, you know, that have good money, and they ask for all these pay stubs and shit.
Oh, my God, yeah, it's crazy. And last time I was looking for an apartment, I had found this really, really nice place up here in Knickerbocker, and I was about ready to sign the lease, and the realtor said, oh, you know, the landlord's a little bit concerned about your credit. So just as an assurance, he's going to raise the rent $100 a month.
Oh, that sucks.
Well, and not only does it suck, it doesn't make any sense. Why you? So you're concerned about my ability to pay, therefore you're going to charge me more?
Right. Right. I thought you were going to say, so we're going to ask for a certain amount up front or something.
Yeah,
like
no. He wanted to charge me more each month. And that, to me, is just like, okay, well, he probably really wasn't concerned about my credit. He saw that as an excuse to ask for more money.
So it sounds like, you know, it's really, it's pretty interesting because you obviously are somebody really driven and hardworking. And if money was your motivation, then you would probably have a pretty good amount of money, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and I remember my dad coming and visiting me in L.A. when I was living in total squalor and I was doing the actor thing out there. And I just remember him saying to me, you know, I just have to remind myself that if you wanted to be a CEO of a corporation, that's what you would be right now. But this is what you're choosing to do. And it is, you know. It's like that line in Citizen Kane. There's nothing to making a lot of money if all you want to do is make a lot of money.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So then that's never been a goal for me.
Sure.
So, but, you know, and I think that that's, you know, part of the reason that it freaks me out is that I just, you know, I need to make, I worry about my ability even just to have enough to be able to, like, eat and sustain myself.
Right.
You know?
Right. That's what I was going to ask you about, too, stability. Like, right. Do you have enough stability in your life? Do you ever feel like...
No, but when I... Those times that I do, I really kind of crave the instability. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
You know? But mm-hmm. It's like, because I'm more creative when things are a little uncertain and unstable.
You like a little bit of tension.
Yeah.
But you don't want... It's interesting, because if you get some financial instability... You can put all your anxiety on that stuff, which isn't like that, you know, interesting or whatever. Whereas it'd be worse if you had it about your projects, because that would be more stressful in a way.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of the opposite of that. That's interesting. I learned something there. Like I put my, not that I'm like, you know, financial stability is a big thing for me. Just, you know, modest financial stability.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I put all my anxiety in my work.
Right.
So, right. You know, it'd be great just to reverse those. Maybe I should try, you know, try to like, I don't know.
try
all my money away.
Try freaking out about money. Yeah.
Try freaking out about money. Not that, well, whatever, but, So, what was I going to say? I wanted to find out more about your mother, though. What was your mom like? What's your relationship with? She's still alive. Your dad died.
Yeah, my dad died in 2002, and my mom is still going. And my mom is gonna. I mean, my mom just turned 80, and she's.
Wow.
I would not be surprised if she lived past 100 years old. I mean, she's just has one of those spirits, you know. She's an amazing, incredible woman. And, my relationship with her is great now. I mean, and you know, she's, you know, not only my mom, but she's one of my best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, we had a rocky relationship when I was a teenager, but as a teenager, I was very rebellious. I was a punk rock kid.
Mm-hmm.
I would like just leave. I would go leave town and hitchhike to Chicago, and you know,
were you really rebellious?
Yeah.
Were you like, I'm getting away from these dumb girls?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was just, I think everybody was dumb at that point. You know?
Yeah. But so there was. Would you just like leave your house without saying where you were going?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You would disappear.
I would just disappear.
That's so bad.
I know. I was a really bad kid.
That doesn't sound like somebody who would be getting A's.
I didn't. I mean, and that is so, but the, see what I dropped out of high school. I went to public high school. I dropped out.
And where was that? Where did you go to school?
I went to school in Arlington, Massachusetts.
Which is a really nice middle class town.
Well, now it is. Back then it was very working class,
mm-hmm.
Very hardcore.
Irish and Roman Catholic, and very, very super working class. Like, I mean, like my friends' dads were like brick masons, and
but
you know,
white,
like
a, white working class.
White, yes, very white. Yeah, there was. I mean, we actually happened to live next to pretty much one of the only black families in town. Lived next door to
was
us.
Was it Republican white white working class?
You know, I didn't really. It was very conservative.
Yeah,
that's a really tricky thing when you start talking about Massachusetts, because Massachusetts can be. I mean, they can be Democrats, but super conservative.
Sure.
You know?
But would it have been like a judgmental type of community?
Oh, extremely.
Yeah.
And me being, you know. And also very religious. Like, I moved there when I was 7, and my sisters and I, first day of school, got chased home from school. The kids throwing rocks at us, calling us bastards, because my mom was divorced and remarried.
Nice.
Yeah, and I didn't know what a bastard was. I remember my mom having to explain it to me. But there were, but there were kids whose parents wouldn't let them hang out with us or play with us at all because my parents were divorced.
Wow.
I mean, then this was the 70s, and it was a super different time. And like I said, Arlington was a very, very different place back then.
Wow. So I can say it was like that when I was growing up too. So yeah. Was that like were you ostracized? Was that self-conscious?
Self-conscious thing? Very ostracized. I was, I mean, and also I was ostracized for being smart. I was like the smart kid. And so, you know, I got beat up for being a brain. Like, you know, it doesn't make any sense now when you talk like, oh, he got beat up because he was smart, you know, asshole, smart guy, you know, but that's what people did. And
right. Being different. You were different.
Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, right,
were you
it was
good
different.
At sports? Because
no,
is
terrible.
Oh, see, that's the bad thing. That's a you sure you're not a you're Jewish? That's such a Jewish stereotype.
Sure
I'm Jewish.
I'm not Jewish.
I grew up with a lot of. I grew up in a Jewish. Sure. I went to Jewish, very Jewish oriented high school. You would have fit in great there. Too bad.
Well, yeah, this was a very Catholic high school, and everybody. It was a very, very sports oriented town too. And I remember like pleading with my mom to like, so I could, like, can I please try out for Little League, even though I didn't know how to play baseball when I first moved there, and she let me. And the first moment I was on the field, I got hit in the head by, you know, like a line drive, and, like, basically knocked out and carried off. And that it was at that moment that, you know, my parents and my dad in particular went, okay, you know, we got to find something that this kid is good at. And that's when they put me into children's theater, and that's when my whole sort of theatrical thing started. Yeah.
So you were a theater kid all grown.
I was a theater kid. So I had like these friends that from the Boston Children's Theater that were from all different kinds of communities around Boston. And then the people in my town I didn't really hang out with very much. And then I dropped out of high school when I was 16.
Wow. What did you do? Or like how did that happen?
Well, it happened because I was hanging out again, like I was really involved in the punk rock scene in Boston, and a lot of my friends went to this school called the Cambridge School in Weston, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool, super progressive. Like, you know, they didn't have desks, they had couches, and they read great literature, and they called their teachers by their first names. And I was like, I want to go to that school. That's the school I want to go to. But we couldn't afford it, right? We're not a rich family. And so I had this grand plan that I was gonna drop out. I was gonna go to work for a year, get to some kind of great job somewhere, and make enough money to be able to go to that school. Well, I did drop out, and I think that I got two jobs. One was cleaning offices in Harvard Square, and the other one was telemarketing for the Boston Globe. And I really wasn't making any money. But I continued to go through this process of applying to this school. And my mom was freaking out. And my mom goes, well, she would continually say, I don't know what you're going to do if you get into this school. And my answer to her was always this very flippant kind of like, well, I'm going to go is what I'm going to do. She's like, well, I don't know how you're going to do that, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't know either, but I'm going to. And so I applied to the school. They accepted me as a high-risk student. I didn't really get any scholarship money, but it came down to like, it was like a week before I had to pay, like put a deposit, and I didn't have any money. Mm-hmm. I came home from wherever I was one day, and there was an envelope for me from a law firm in Florida, which I opened it up, and there was a check for $20,000 inside. And This was the, my grandparents had died several years earlier, and I had no idea that there was any inheritance coming from them at all.
That's crazy.
But then right at the right time.
That's crazy.
Right? Right?
Wow. What a sign. Did you go nuts?
Oh my God. My mom cried. My mom like broke down in tears.
That must have made her really feel like really happy.
Oh my God, she was so happy. She was so relieved, and I was like,
crazy.
I know.
That's like, you know, that's like from the, you know, coming back from the dead. That makes me believe in ghosts.
I know. Well, I remember telling the story to one of my first teachers in college when I first went to NYU.
Mm-hmm.
And she going like, that just really makes you believe in a higher power.
It sure does. You know? That's crazy.
Yeah.
So that must have been such a great moment in your life. Like, was that I'm imagining that.
You know what that was? That was the moment that I started to understand that if you behave as if something is going to happen,
mm-hmm.
the likelihood that that thing will happen is going to go up. Now, not that anything supernatural made that check appear,
mm-hmm.
but if I had given up, mm-hmm. if I had said, okay, well, I'm going to proceed as if I'm not going to get into this school and I'm going to go back mm-hmm. to art, you know what I mean? The check would have come and I would have gone, oh, well, this would have been really useful, you know, had I stayed on that track.
Right. It was like you were right. Because I mean, if you had just been, if it had been a passing thought, you would have gotten the same check, and it would have been like, you know, who knows? You'd be riding around in a car or something.
Right. Exactly. I probably would have bought something really expensive and stupid, and that would have been it.
So that is pretty. But so it sounds like you started really finding yourself with the theater people more, right? So were you like into music, obviously, but were you also into like acting, and were you going
to
be?
Oh, totally. I mean, that was my. I mean, you know, when I first went to college in 1984, I set off for New York, and I went to NYU with the idea that I was going to. I went to the theater program, experimental theater wing, this idea that I was going to be an actor. And I actually was, you know, did that for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, I actually, you know, kind of made my living for a little bit doing that.
Well, what kinds of things were you?
Well, doing? I started. I mean, when I was at NYU, I started working with the director Robert Wilson.
Really? Wow. Yeah.
And so did a couple shows with him, and sort of, you know, did an opera in Italy at La Scala, and then toured Europe with this.
Kidding?
No. Yeah.
Wow.
And I was like, that's when I was 21 years old.
And singing.
No. So the way Wilson did it, so he did, the opera singers sing concert style while the actors did all the movement, all this grand movement on the stage.
Wow.
And it was really great. But I was really super young, and I thought that, I was like, this is how my life is going to be, right? I'm mm-hmm. just going to be like the rest of my life kind of flying around on, you know, mm-hmm. in first class from city to city and living in hotels and doing these like great pieces of art. And of course that didn't, you know,
mm-hmm.
that didn't last. Mm-hmm.
Wow. But you had some pretty big experiences, and it obviously put you on a path to where you are now. I mean, you've been on a path. Okay, so we're getting towards the end, and like I just want to wrap before we wrap up. I want to go back to just cuz I don't want to think that I want no stone unturned.
Okay.
We had started talking about your sexuality, and it's clear, like, I understand that you were saying you were bisexual, and we got a good picture, I think, or at least a reasonable picture of the females, you know, your interest in women. So what about men? Like, was that always there, or have you had any relationships with men?
I have not had relationships with men, and I don't really... I don't really desire them that much, to be honest mm-hmm. with you. And I think that, I mean, even just... You know, my calling myself bisexual is just more of it's. You know, it's not something that I actively pursue or I'm actively involved in. It's just that, you know, the very limited experience that I do have, you know, was sort of like I was kind of like, oh, well, that didn't totally suck, you know. So
you like to think of yourself more on the spectrum than in one way or another.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, we're all bisexual.
Right. Yeah.
All right. I just wanted to be clear about that. Was there anything else? Let me think just for a second. So I think, I mean, you know, we could really, so it sounds like you had a pretty, Sounds like there's a lot of love in your family.
Right.
And it sounds like there was... What about your stepfather? I wanted... You didn't talk about him at all.
Well, I mean, my stepfather was not around for very long. He might... My mom remarried when I was 7. That's when I moved to Arlington. And then they divorced by the time I was 13. So that lasted about... That lasted 6 years.
That's a long time in those years.
Yeah, it is. And that was also difficult. I mean, that was because he was very much... He became sort of like a father figure. But then he sort of stopped being that, you know, and didn't really communicate. He just sort of... And it was very confusing as a small child. Like, sure. Why is this guy, like, who was just... like my dad, now not talking to me at all.
So did you feel...
And it had nothing to do with me. It had to do with the way their relationship was going. Sure. So, yeah.
Do you feel like maybe a little emotionally abandoned by him at some point?
Probably. I mean, honestly, I feel like I barely even remember him at this point. I don't really think about him very much at all. So...
Do you ever talk about this stuff with your sisters?
About him? No. Uh-uh.
He's been kind of like... Yeah,
it was a long time ago, and none of us really, I don't know, like give enough of a shit at this point to like even talk about it.
So your mom must have been like did you take drugs too in high school? Was there drinking and drugs?
Yeah, there was drinking and drugs. There was, well, I mean, I wasn't shooting heroin, but I was, no. You know, I was definitely drinking beer and smoking weed and...
How about LSD?
I did acid.
Ups and downs?
Yeah. I did acid in high school, but like not, I wasn't like a total acid head. I would do it like, you know, every so often with some friends or whatever.
So you weren't like going over... Did your mom know that there was that going on or was...
Oh, totally. She knew.
And so that must have been upsetting for her.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it was.
So was there...
Honestly, I don't think she, like, really thought that, you know, smoking pot was the biggest, you know...
She had faith in you,
tragedy.
I think, right?
Yeah.
So was there kind of a reconciliation at some point when you became an adult with her? Or...
I think so. I mean, I think it happened in my early 20s when I just sort of, you know, and I actually did move back home for a while after I went to NYU. I moved back to Boston for a bit. And, I live with my mom and yeah, I mean, and like I said, like we, you know, we're really good friends and we used to like go to the theater together and, you know, she was really cool. And I never felt like she ever really held a grudge against me, you know, for being a bad teenager. I just was, you know, I was a bad teenager and then you move on.
That's how you form you find your own identity.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel like most of the interesting people I know were bad teenagers.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know. I totally agree with that. So we're almost done here, aren't we? So I just want to, yeah. let's do another station identification, Brooklyn Free Radio. Radio Free Brooklyn, sorry. This is Dr. Lisa with Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I also wanted to, just before we leave, I wanted to give my good friend Holly Dorito a shout out because if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't know Reverend Jen and I wouldn't know Tom and I wouldn't have the dog I have because Holly has been responsible for giving a lot of dogs great homes and just being a really good friend to me personally. So I just want to put that out there. Okay, thank you. Are we done here?
Yeah, 1 minute.
Okay.
Fill it up.
1 more minute. Fill it up. So I got through this. I'm pretty good. It was good. I enjoyed myself, and I'm looking forward to my next session, which will be we're going to replay this during the week, I guess.
Tomorrow too,
and then my next session, live session with another patient, will be next Friday at 2. So we will see you then. Maybe we'll fade out on the music. What do you think? Because I played, if you didn't notice, I played I'd Like to Give the World a Coke in honor of the Mad Men closing episode, final episode. We all remember that. Okay, let's get that on. Here it is. Let's see what happens. There we go.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love.